Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Welcome back to another Tuesday on the Tuesday Live Show. This is a YouTube live show I try to do every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Sometimes dates and times change. That is intended to be a place where I answer questions that have been submitted. But also, if you have a question, throw it down in the comment section below. I'll answer it during the show. It's also a podcast. You might be listening to this on Spotify or, I don't know, something, Apple Podcasts. And if you do, I apologize. This is not meant as audio. I'm not the best person at saying words well. And so it's maybe a little bit better as video, but hopefully it's decent as a podcast for those of you that just want to hear me ramble on about stuff. And we have a good, nice schedule today. We have, first, what type of a flip line I've been working on. And, well, you can read the rest, and we'll get to this stuff as we go. The first thing is the flip line. I have been testing a number of flip lines. This is the latest one I've been testing because a lot of us are buying flip lines designed for climbing. They're climbing anchors, or we just cut some webbing. Paul makes some. Here's one right here. It's designed for kayaking. I like this one's great. It's a little bit big, but if you like a little thicker, it's great. The new ultra high molecular weight, whatever they're called, are light. They do well in UV. They're strong. They float. They're minimal. This is sort of the future for flip lines. It doesn't take up much space. Shoving this in a PFD pocket doesn't take much space at all. It can go into a little green jacket side pocket or in your clamshell. Or I've been using this a ton. And it's just really useful. Once you have this, it's easy to use, it's accessible, you find yourself using it a lot. I've used mine the past few days. I've been kayaking and just clipping on people's boats just to hold their boats as they get out of their boats on like a steep bank, or to like pull a boat up on shore. For rafting, I might just clip on really quick and hold on to it instead of tying it to a tree. I'll just hold on to it really quick. And it's, of course, valuable as a flip line, a boat anchor, a raft anchor. And so this is the last prototype. I've had other prototypes. Here's one. I pulled the stitching through as I was testing it. This one has much more stitching. So if it as an anchor, it's stronger. Anyway, I just want to tell you, I'm pretty jazzed on this project. It's been really fun to source the material, find the people to sew it well, and just test to make the exact right one that at some point, hopefully the next couple months, I'll have available for sale at riverhardware.com. Yeah, I'm pretty jazzed on it. So wanted to share some thoughts on it with the rest of you. And let's get on to the next thing, which is talking about private whitewater. Oh man, Cody's channel is pretty awesome. For those of you that like whitewater channels, he's all about private boating. I do some private boating, some commercial boating. I do a kind of a combo of stuff. He's just 100% focused on private boating. And there's a lot of stuff I would say that's like how to get permits, how to plan a private trip. Stuff I don't even deal with. I really don't ever get permits. I just, when I go private boating, it's usually on unpermitted rivers. I don't enjoy group planning for private trips. I do it for work, so I have no interest in it. And Cody talks a lot about this stuff. It's a great channel. He's at 980 subscribers, and 1,000 subscribers for a YouTube channel is a huge milestone. And so he's so close. Let's get him over the hump. There's 17 of you watching right now. I know that. I can see it. It's a fact. And so those of you watching, if you just click over, I don't care if you leave this, just leave this for good. Go over to his channel, maybe watch one of his videos. But really, like, let's get him to 1,000. It'd be sweet if he get there today. He puts a lot of effort into it. I know it would be pretty meaningful for him to get there. I'd be stoked for him to get to 1,000. And again, there's so many great videos here worth watching that, you know, if you have some time and want to just watch some of his videos, like it's a great channel. So please support it. Let me see if I refresh it. And if he has more than 980, that would be cool. Does he have 980? He has 981. Look, that might have been us. So I'm going to actually leave this off. Probably close this in a second. But man, it'd be super cool to get everybody over to, or to get this over to 1,000. Okay. Sean has a comment. Did you see the footage of the Chilcotin finally? Yeah, that's pretty cool. That was really interesting stuff. That, you know, these things have happened all over the world, these big landslides of dammed rivers. But this is probably the first where there's like helicopters flying around documenting it, which is pretty cool. So yeah, that was pretty neat. Okay, back to our agenda. We talked about the flip line I'm super excited about. Private Whitewater, let's get him to 1,000 subscribers, or let's help get him there. And now to answer questions. So the first questions is, hello, I'm a big fan of Gear Garage. Oh, thanks. That's nice. I saw the video on foot cups, which was great, and I had a few more questions about foot cups. Just so you all know, one of the reasons I make the videos is to help not answer questions. And so when I make a video and you have more questions, I'm like, I did a really bad job because I did my best. I gave you hopefully all the information you need when I made that video. Yeah, I'm sorry that you have more questions, but I'll do my best to answer them here. I manage, by the way, and I don't use foot cups that much, so like I'm not a foot cup expert anymore. I manage a university student-led outdoor recreation program. We have a 12-foot raft that has two thwarts. Okay, well, that's probably part of your problem. You probably want three thwarts, but I'm going. The center compartment is an awkward span for one paddler to use the thwarts to lock themselves in. We're thinking about putting a set of foot cups in the center compartment to help with a span issue, as well maybe fit two people on each side for that center compartment rather than just two. I don't understand. Maybe fit two people on each side for that center compartment rather just, I don't understand that, but whatever. I would love any thoughts you all have on foot cup placement, installation tricks, etc. that you might have. I mean, foot cup placement's tough. It's, you just have somebody sit in the boat and like imagine where they want their feet to go and put the foot cup there. There's not a whole lot more to it. I probably, a 12-foot raft with two thwarts. I mean, I don't know. Are you a recreation program that only owns one raft? Because if you are, I probably would just not mess with it. Like you have one little raft that people use. If people want to go run stouts and be rad, they probably need to get their own raft. The 12-foot raft the program owns is probably not adequate for a lot of stuff. I'm just guessing. If you're a whitewater program and you have a bunch of rafts, I could see how you might want to do this. But in terms of putting foot cups in, you just guess where you put them and you put them there. And then usually you're wrong. Like every time I put a foot cup in, like a month later, I think, oh, I should have put it at more of an angle or further out. Like you never get it right. You just do your best and it is what it is. And for installing it, I mean, you just like, it's like gluing a patch, except it doesn't have to hold air. Like when you patch a raft, the patch over a hole has to hold air. A foot cup, when you put a foot cup in, it just has to be attached. And so if you mess it up, it's not the end of the world. It's just, they're not fun to do. And so I would try to avoid it. I would almost try to figure out, could you put a third thwart in there somehow? Could you somehow figure out, maybe attach two attachments and put a third thwart in the middle somehow? So that's my best guess without having any more information. You just guess and then glue it in. Okay. Blair, subscribe to Cody's channel a while ago. I like his videos, very informative, really down to earth. Yeah, he's awesome. He's a firefighter and he's a hero and he's a great dude to bow with. Okay. Howdy, I've stuck with the Sterling Rabbit Runner as a flip line. Yeah, that's solid. That's what I've used forever. That Traveler from Rafting Mag sent to me. Oh, cool. There are small loops for carabiner on either end. Have you tried this product? Yeah, I mean, I have tons of these. I mean, do I have any here in front of me? I have tons of these Sterling Rabbit Runners. I think we introduced Trevor to it the first time. This is a little bit better than the Sterling one. I'm always trying to get better. It has the same loops at the ends for a carabiner like that. It's just a little thinner, a little lighter. I don't think the Sterling Rabbit Runner. I have to see which one it is. I'm pretty sure the Blue Water one is really good. That's the one that we started with. The Sterling one, I think I know that one is, if it's yellow, it's not, it's too thick. But this is the one based on flipping a lot of boats myself, teaching a lot of classes. This is what I want. Every time I have a flip line I bought from a climbing company, I'm like, oh man, I wish it was different based on this, 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 and this. And after testing a lot of different ones, this is it. It's really close to the Palm one that I was selling before that I sold out of. It's just a little wider. And it's just a little bit better than the Palm one, I think. But we went a little bit wider and a tiny bit thicker. And there's more sewing here because I don't want this sewing to come out. Anyway, yeah. I don't know which one Trevor sent you, so I can't really talk about the Heidi. Okay, back to this. Here's a pin we arrived at in Blossom Bar. Looks like an outfitter's gear boat that was stuck. Oh, this is a video that was sent to me. Yeah. When he showed up, there's a 3-to-1 with a small group rigged river left, trying to pull the raft upstream out of the picket fence with two throw ropes tied together going across the river for a raft-assisted vector pull. If there's a small group river left trying to pull the raft upstream, I'm not sure how that works. Two throw ropes tied together is probably not going to work. It's definitely not going to work. Okay, hold on. I got to preface this. Okay, I am not a swiftwater rescue instructor. And so anything I say, you should probably ask a certified rescue instructor. Anything I'm about to say is based on my just experience. All I have backing me up is my crappy YouTube channel that you're watching right now. I'm not like ACA certified. I'm not Rescue 3 certified. So take it or leave it. This is free advice. You're talking to an uncertified person, but I have strong opinions based on experience. And so, yeah, I have very strong opinions. I'm going to tell you them, but I want to be really clear that you should probably, if you want real advice, take a class from a certified swiftwater professional rescuer. Okay, let's get back to this because I know it's vector problem. I have thoughts. Okay. So first of all, tying two throw bags depends on the throw bag, are not generally great for pins, and two of them together, that's like 150 feet of not great rope. If you vector pull on that, it's going to stretch them so much, you're going to get to 20 degrees in no time. When you're doing a vector pull, if this is a straight rope, 0 degrees, when you're at 10 degrees, it's basically a 3-to-1. And you get to 10 degrees really fast just based on like the rope stretching, the knot stretching, the like raft changing its shape just a little bit. You get to 10 degrees in no time. At 30 degrees, which is like, I don't know, like that, it's a 1-to-1. It's useless. And more than 30 degrees, it's worse. It's worse than 1-to-1. It's like 0.8-to-1 or whatever it is. So like vector pulls only work when this angle is basically small, right? I would say 0 to 15, 20 degrees, they're effective. But they go to 10 degrees in no time because of all the stretch of all the components. I've done a bunch of videos on this if you want to watch them. I've done the math. Yeah, vector pull, in my opinion, in my professional opinion. If you want to ask me about river guiding, I'm a professional. I will tell you a professional opinion that I can back up. But now they're talking about rescue. I'm just a dope with the river of the YouTube channel. You're just asking a dope an opinion. And in my opinion, it's just only based on experience, not like actual education. So my opinion is that vector pulls are kind of dumb. And I think part of the reason they get taught is because rescue instructors are worried that people are going to do 3-to-1s and pull too hard and break things and hurt people, which is a valid thing, which I think in a 3-to-1, it can be overcome with like multi-point anchors and dampening the system, redirects, just being smart, just like looking at the system saying, maybe we shouldn't stand there. I think 3-to-1s personally are effective. They can also capture progress. Like a vector pull, you can't capture progress. You pull and then you let go. I guess if you have a 3-to-1 tightening it, you can capture progress, but you have a 3-to-1 then. Why not just use it? I don't know. I don't get it. But I think to go on this rant, because this is a topic that I think a lot about, the reason rescue instructors like vector pulls is because they're teaching something that isn't as inherently dangerous as a 3-to-1, or, you know, people all of a sudden turn their 3-to-1s into 5-to-1s and 9-to-1s, which could potentially get dangerous. And so they're trying to teach safer techniques. Like, hey, do the vector pull. It's really hard to hurt yourself with a vector pull. And they love that whole, I mean, maybe it's not big. I think rescue instructors love that thing where they put the rope and have people tug of war, and the person gets in the middle with one finger and pulls the people towards each other. They love showing that they know science and math and stuff. Like, there's really fun exercises you can do in a class with the vector pull that make the instructor look super smart. I think they enjoy doing that. But just to wrap up my whole rant here, I don't think we should be doing vector pulls in whitewater situations. If you're a rescue person rescuing people that like fell in a car, or if you're a rescue professional showing up to a scene, like you're a firefighter or that kind of rescuer that has like all the bells and whistles, I don't know what to do. That's a whole different world. But if you're a whitewater paddler, I just think doing a vector pull is not the smartest thing. Okay, sorry, go back to, I just had to rant about that. I don't know why. Okay, here we go. With two thread ropes tied together, going across the river for a raft-assisted vector pole. It didn't work. Shocker. So we helped the group already on scene get a 300-foot half-inch line. I don't know who's carrying a 300-foot half-inch line, but that's badass. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you literally, if you just attach that line, you might just get it off by pulling, because two throw bags are going to stretch so much. You put a real line on there and pull, it might do something. And a rig a 3-to-1 from atop the cliffs on River Wright, which we're going to watch the video here in a second, which was successful. Oh, huh. Interesting. The vector pull didn't work. The 3-to-1 did. Shocker. I don't have video of the whole operation as I put my phone down to rig and haul. Come on, man. Take, like, this video is gold. Like, why are you putting your phone down? There's, find somebody else to rig and haul, or find somebody to hold the camera. This video is gold out there. I'm curious your thoughts on the scene, and particularly the vector pull by the raft in midstream. Okay, so, oh yeah, that's right. And, okay, so let's get the video up, because the video is awesome. It's in the video, it's really high, low quality video. It's the best that I got, but I love this video so much. And I put it up already. For those of you that are members, you may have seen it. I have like members only videos. Anytime I get video of some kind of like, I don't know, carnage or problem, I just throw it up there. Sometimes with commentary, sometimes without. This was without. And so you may have seen this and been like, why is Zach putting this up? It's so that I can talk about this. So what's happening here, I think, well, first of all, there's a raft on river left, all the way on the left, stuck. And they're running two throw bags all the way to River Right. And it looks like this raft in the middle is pulling on it like a vector. So I think I have a lot of problems with this scene, a lot. First of all, that raft does not look pinned to me. It just looks really stuck. And so I think what you would do is just go over there on that side and help that raft get unstuck. It doesn't look pinned. Now, maybe I'm wrong and the video is crappy, but like to run a rope across the entire river to me is not responsible for a few reasons. One, there's so much rope stretch that it's pretty ineffective. Sounds like it ended up working with the good static line with, and a half inch static line, there's not that much stretch, but rarely do people have 300 feet of half inch static line. But with throw bags, I mean, it's just pointless. There's so much stretch. And this river across, this rope across the river is blocking the channel for everybody else that might come down. So there's now probably, I don't know, I'm guessing 10, 20, 40 boats that are waiting for this disaster to unfold. And setting up this system, and it does look like that raft is pulling on it looks like, I can't tell for sure, but yeah, he's pulling downstream. So that raft is pulling on the vector pole. So my take is some people took a rescue class and the instructor said, vector poles are the secret to the world. They work all the time. And people spent, I mean, this to set this up with a raft and all is a 45-minute process minimum. To get two throw bags attached with a raft attached in the middle. In 45 minutes, people are just stacking up because somebody in a class one time told them vector poles are super awesome, which I think they're wrong. Again, opinion, you should get your advice not from a stupid YouTube channel, but a professional rescue instructor. Okay, so again, opinions. One, that boat's just stuck. Just send some people over there and push and pull it off. It's not that big of a deal. Two, running a rope across the river that far is a bad idea because of rope stretch and because you're blocking the entire channel for every other person wanting to use the river. And pulling on a vector pole with a raft, to me, I'm not sure where they got the idea, but I could have told you it wasn't going to work without doing it, but whatever. So it looks like they're pulling with the raft. Obviously, the raft's not moving. And it looks like, if you look, God, this video is so funny. Now there's somebody who popped out of here. If you see down here, this yellow life jacket person. Now this person is in the line of fire. The whole point of a vector pole is that if you break D-rings and the whole, or something breaks and the whole system comes back, that you don't hurt somebody or kill them. Well, you've just negated the vector pole because you now have somebody in the line of fire. It looks like he's pulling on it too, which, if I'm going to use that vector pull concept, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do a 3-to-1, get it really tight, and then maybe attach a flip line or something, like my flip line, to get like 10 feet away and just pull on the rope and just see what happens. Just to get a little bit, maybe a person pulling, like, can use the vector pull concept. But my primary is the 3-to-1. That's how I get the rope tight to begin with, because you need a tight rope. Again, as soon as you get to 10 degrees, you're at 3-to-1. And once you're at 30 degrees, you're at 1-to-1. So it's basically the same as pulling. And so you have to minimize the angle. The only way to minimize that angle is a really tight line. And the way to get a tight line is to have minimal stretch rope, which is not throw bags, and to use a 3-to-1. That's how you tighten it up. And I know some people are going to say you should use a transport hitch, but like only like 3 people in the world know how to do that in the field. And one of them probably forgot because their adrenaline's high. Okay. So I don't know. They're pulling. It's not working, obviously. Duh. They're pulling. And yeah. And then here, this is just a little video of it. Looks like they got another rope out. This might be the half inch rope to do the 3-to-1, which took them another, I don't know, to get the, to, so they had their whole vector pull set up, didn't work. And then now they're like, let's get the static line out there. They've been here for hours at this point, right? And there's probably so many people upstream who like need to get to camp, who are in the sun getting dehydrated. They're getting frustrated because of these mistakes. So I'm going to say, like, what I would have done in this situation is gone over to River Left, eddy down River Left, walked a bunch of people over there, and just see what you can do with people power. It doesn't seem like there's anybody else over there. They could have walked over there and helped this person while people floated the rapid. And then a few hours later, when it doesn't work and the river's not crowded, which I'm guessing is crowded right now, then if you want to do your insane rope across the river system that's not blocking everybody's way, maybe do that. But I don't know. So I have a lot of thoughts about this. Here, let's go back to the end. Obviously. And they ended up pulling the 3-to-1. But like who out there? Oh, here we go. Who out there is carrying 300 feet of static line? I just like, it's good somebody did, but like I think in general, you definitely want to pull the boat off the way it wants to come off the rock. But I've never seen anybody pull from across the entire length of any river. So it did work, but I mean, you blocked everybody. So those are my thoughts. Just to sum it up, to reiterate what I'm thinking. 1, I am not a rescue instructor. I'm not certified in any way to talk about this stuff. You shouldn't listen to anything I just said, because it's just the rambling thoughts of I'm only a graduate of a rescue class. I'm not an instructor. That's only thoughts of a graduate of a class. And so you shouldn't listen to me. But if you do listen to me for some terrible reason, vector pulls are generally don't work. They're a cute idea that theoretically could work. 3-to-1, if you use a 3-to-1, which was what ended up working, you want to be conscious that you're not going to get hurt or killed by like the thing breaking and firing metal back at you. And you can handle that by doing 3 things. 1 is have like a 2 or 3 point anchor on the raft. 2, dampen the system, put like a life jacket or things on the rope, so when it fires back, something catches it. And 3, just do a redirect. Like the redirect makes it less efficient, but it also makes it safer. So when the rope comes down, just redirect it with another pulley out of the way. And then people pulling aren't in the line of fire. Okay, cool. Those are my thoughts. Next question. I've been watching your Gear Garage show and was hoping to learn more. Oops, we'll go back. I was hoping to learn more about C position in relationship to oar towers. My raft is set up to be a very tall seat that's going to be replaced by a frame bar and a seat bracket to lower the rower seat. But how close should the front of the seat be to the oar towers? That's a good question. And, you know, we talk about this a lot, and there's not a good exact answer. It does depend on how you row. Some people sit all the way back in their seat. Some people sit on the edge. If you have the right length oars, which hopefully you do, well, first of all, kudos for recognizing your seat is too tall and lowering it. That's going to be huge. But if your oars are the right length and your seat's in the right position, you want you do want your oars kind of close to you, but you also want to be able to ship. So if they're too close, you can't get the blade past your PFD. Maybe if you tap your PFD a little bit underway through to ship, that's fine. So you want to think about shipping. Like, can I get the oars around? I generally, as a general rule of thumb, put the oar towers where my knees are. So as a very general rule of thumb, if I'm sitting forward, then my knees are more forward. I'm sitting back, my knees are more back. But we're based on where I'm sitting, about where my knees are. But then maybe I adjust them a little bit forward and back based on how well I'm going to ship. Hopefully that makes sense. I don't think there's an exact answer. I don't have an exact answer for this. This is something I should study a little more carefully and do a video about. But also, like, I put people in boats all the time. The oar towers are probably off by like 3-4 inches all the time. And everybody's fine. So it's not like a major, major thing. If I'm going to look at like the things that affect my performance the most when setting my raft, it's having a seat that's not super high and having the right length oars. And those are the two things. Like where your oar towers are exactly, I don't think is a huge thing. And again, like I would say if they're matching up with your knees, that's a good start. Okay, I just got into whitewater rafting this year after a lifetime of rowing drift boats for fly fishing all over the West. I recently moved to Tennessee and would love to get on a trip down the Middle Fork. Do you have any advice for me, just on my own, getting on a Middle Fork trip without being part of a large group of my own? So I think I understand this question. Basically, how do I do the Middle Fork without organizing a trip? So one answer is you just get a permit, which is very hard to get. It's like a 1 in 70 chance, and you go by yourself. I don't recommend solo boating. So maybe you have a friend that will come with you, but there's also a ton of people along the Middle Fork. So if you're solo boating, it's not like you're solo boating the Illinois or something. So one would be getting a permit. The other way, if you don't want to organize a group, but you want to row, is hire a commercial outfitter to take you. I'm not sure if that's what you want. It's hard to understand your question exactly. Getting on a Middle Fork trip without being of a large group of my own. So one, you could, it would be a large group, but it wouldn't be your own. It's just pay an outfitter to like take you, and they would have to let you row. Don't call me, because I'm not a huge fan of this. It's not like when people row on our trips, they're usually a distraction to the trip. It makes the trip harder for the guides. And people that row, sometimes they mess up and they cause safety issues. They can't keep up. They get tired. You know, we rarely let people row their own boats anymore. We do occasionally, but like it's a massive hassle. How do you get your boat to put in and take out? And what if your boat tears? There's just so many questions. And so I'm an outfitter in the Middle Fork, but don't call me. I know Agapaw does this a lot. And so if you're interested in doing this, I would maybe call Agapaw. And okay. And then the other option would be, I think maybe you're asking, how do you get on a private trip that's not your own? So like, I think your options are just get your own permit and go by yourself, which is solo boating, which you shouldn't do. One is to hire an outfitter and go along in a group. And the answer is call Agapaw. The other thing is get invited on somebody else's Middle Fork trip. And I think you just have to have friends that get a permit, basically, or then like be connected, like talk to people, be like, hey, I want to go to the Middle Fork. If you ever get a permit in Tennessee, if there's some sort of outdoorsy boating club, join that and go to meetings and be helpful. And I go boating with people, like you just have to meet people and then hopefully you get invited. The key, you know, I get asked a lot of time, like, how do I make boating friends? It's just like, be a nice, responsible person. Don't be a dummy. So like when you go boating, help people carry their boats down the hill and don't make them wait for you forever. Don't be late because you got a latte. And you know, don't be selfish and maybe share some food with them, bring some chocolate bars or some beers for takeout or whatever. Have a car that can transport your boat, be able to like be self-sufficient, bring a safety kit, bring a first aid kit, have training, have rescue training, have first aid training, like be an asset. And so if you're an asset, people will want you to come. That's how you get asked to be on a Middle Fork trip. If you're a liability, and people that are liabilities don't know their liabilities. I maybe they do, but like they usually don't know. But if you're, you know, you always need help carrying your stuff and you are always the last one to get ready and you are useless in an emergency, and you're not that fun, I'm not sure why people would want you. So basically, I would just say, like, I don't know, be a boater and be a good boater, and eventually it will happen. Or pay Agapa or somebody like that that will take you down. All right, or tower position. I sit and go through rowing motion. I set or tower so the towers move the same distance forward and back. I'm not sure how that works. I set or tower so the or towers move the same distance. They should move the same distance forward and back. Oh, I see. Like, you want them so that they go wherever they are, they go the same forward when you're leaning forward as they do back. Yeah, I'm not sure if that makes sense to me, but maybe it does. Could also a middle fork permit have schedule flexibility? Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, you can also, yeah, there's been a lot of drop permits this year because people, I don't know, people get permits and then they find that the water's going to be low and there's new rapids and they're like, oh, well, I don't want to go. They don't do the research before they get the permit. So this year we saw a lot of small groups out there, like two-person groups for sure. Yeah, rowing schools can be a great way to meet people. We have so many like groups of boaters that have met in our classes and become boating friends, and they get permits together. And I even got an email from somebody who took a class four school the other day saying they went on a private trip and were really frustrated with how the other boaters weren't boating safely together. We really push like tight boat spacing, looking out for each other. And then I hear from some boating groups that come take classes with us that they love the safety awareness of the people they met in the class and became boating friends, and they start doing trips together. That is a way, but just going to one of my classes is no guarantee you'll meet people. Like our classes, we like to encourage that, but I can't guarantee you're going to meet people in one of our classes. And our classes are expensive. It's an expensive way to meet people. Okay, moving on. Raft cleaning and maintenance. Hey, I love your YouTube channel. Thanks. I just bought a 2022 Air Tributary 16-foot from my late neighbor. Sweet. Man, a 16-foot Air, sweet boat. I was wondering if you had any videos or pointers on cleaning, polishing, or general upkeep outside of just keeping it out of the sun. I want to make this boat last a long time, so I want to be sure I'm taking care of it. I don't know. I can't remember what videos I've done out there. So you could just search, maybe search YouTube for like type in Gear Garage. Here, I'll just do it. Let me pull up. Let's see. Let's go to find out if I have videos. One thing you can do is type in the search bar, Gear Garage Raft Maintenance. Hopefully I spelled that right. There's raft repairs, wraps, raft repair kit. That might help. More raft repair. I don't see maintenance. Repair. Yeah, lots of raft repair. So that's a quick way to find out if I have a video on something. So it doesn't look like I do, but I think this is a good question for Air, because I mean, my general question would be to clean it. Sometimes we 303 our boats, 303 is a product, but I don't know how to maintain every single boat. And so I might suggest calling Air, and you can just Google Air and then the phone number comes up and just saying, hey, I bought one of your rafts. How do I maintain it? And, or maybe, oh, you know, what's even better is go to YouTube, Air Raft Maintenance. Let's see what we get. Oh, look, Air annual cleaning recommendations. Care maintenance. Oh, this is gold. Care and maintenance of your air inflatable. Repairing an air cell. Oh, one of my silly videos. Advanced air repair. How to clean a raft. Look at that. Annual cleaning. They have multiple videos on it. Basic zipper cleaning. This is gold. God, I'm so good at answering questions. There you go. I didn't answer directly, but I hopefully taught you how to fish. Okay, next question. Hiko Guardian 3.D PFD review. Okay, I know that many of us are still looking for a high buoyancy PFD that is more friendly to rafting, and I came across the Hiko Guardian 3.D PFD. Okay, first of all, yeah, this is frustrating to me. Like, all these PFDs we have, I'm going to rant again. All these PFDs we have are designed for kayakers. Like, hardly any are designed for rafts. It's insane. And I think that the Astral Indus is a good attempt at making a medium flotation PFD for kayakers, and it's adequate for some people who want a medium flotation PFD, right? But if there's no high flotation PFDs, maybe you could call the Justin Bieber a high flotation, but nobody, like, there's a market for this. It's insane. And they keep making PFDs for like 113 pound kayakers. Okay, rant over. All right. This is a European company that does not have U.S. Coast Guard recognition, but I think that ISO certification may satisfy Rangers. Yeah, you would think that. You would think that, but it turns out that's not correct. Because some Rangers follow the law, and the law is very clear in most states that they have to be Coast Guard approved. And although the Rangers recognize that the ISO certification is maybe more stringent and that the PFD that you want to wear has more flotation and making it more safe, they care more about following the regulation than safety. And I've had this conversation with the Rangers. They don't care that the PFD is better. They care about following the law. So yeah, it's not going to, you, nice try. If you're a private boater though, on some rivers, they don't care. If you're a commercial guide, they do care. But the Grand Canyon, they're not going to let that fly. Okay, anyway, and the law says, I mean, there's law that says you have to have a Coast Guard approved PFD. So it doesn't say you have to wear it, it says you have to have it. Okay, anyway. So any chance you can get them to send you over one to review? Probably not. And I mean, that's the tricky thing about the YouTube channel. If I ask somebody to give me something, there is a pressure to be positive about the product. So if I contact them and say, hey, can you send me one of your PFDs? And they do, there's certainly like whether there's they even if they tell me I can say whatever I want, they gave me something. And there's just pressure, internal pressure of my own to only say positive things. And so I rarely I won't call somebody asking for something. I that's not true. A couple times I have things I want to try that I knew I'd probably say positive things about. But I'm not going to call people and ask them for things. But I do spend a lot of money buying stuff. I have, and also I have like 10 or 12 PFDs right back here. I have too many PFDs already. I don't need another one laying around because I bought so many to try them out. Throw bags, knives, flip lines. I'm just swimming in this stuff. I mean, I have river knives everywhere. This is, oh, that reminds me. I did bring the, based on this question. I saw this one ahead of time. This is the Hico throw bag that they sent me on their own. They're like, hey, we love the channel. We think you should check out our throw bag. You'll love it. It's awesome. I don't love it. It's fine. It looks cool, but I'm not really a fan. So they already sent me something and I didn't review it. And because I don't really like it. And there's no point in like making a video about how I don't like this thing. I'd rather just make videos about things I like in general. Anyway, yeah. So like they've already sent me something. They're probably not going to send me something else after I didn't review their throw bag. So yeah, anyway, I'm not going to get them to send over a review. If I really cared, I'd just buy it and I'd review it. But I don't really care because it does look, there are some reasons this PFD is probably awesome. I've never tried it. And we're going to get to them here in a second. I can already tell, I can already read ahead. I just have too many PFDs sitting around and to review another one. I am a little curious though. So maybe I will, we'll see, but I'll probably just buy it if I do it because I don't want to have to, I want to be able to say whatever I want to say. If I do spend $300 on a PFD though to review it, I am going to do a review. If I don't like it, I will say I don't like it. But I see people wearing it all the time and they seem to like it. So it's probably really good. Anyway, it appears to have some nice features. And as you mentioned before in your previous reviews, it does increase the amount of buoyancy as size increases. Yeah, the European PFDs do that. I think it's because it's easier for them to get approval for different sizes, where the Coast Guard is way more expensive. Yeah, I mean, 19 pounds for the large, 20 for the double XL, that's sweet. We need more PFDs like that. That's awesome. It's still, I would still call that medium float, like the low end of medium, but it's better than 16. So, I mean, depends on what rivers you're doing, but I mean, my general take, let's look at this online. I'm going to Google it. Hico Guardian 3.D and see if I can pick them up. Here we go. Let's just do our best review we can with this. First of all, it looks cool. It just looks cool. I like the colors. There's some more colors. Cool color. Not a fan of black because you can't see it, but I can't see. But yeah, this is cool. I think if I was to get one, I'd probably get this blue color, although it's not the most visible. It just looks cool. This pocket looks awesome. Look at that huge pocket. I bet the pocket's amazing. There's another pocket across the front, that little zipper pocket thingy. It's side entry. See these side buckles? I just, for as somebody who puts on a PFD, like on average 3 days a week, four times a week, five times a week, the over the top thing is getting old. If I can find a side entry buckle PFD, I'm in. I just, yeah, I'm super stoked on the side entry. Yeah. So yeah, this looks like a cool PFD. I don't know much more about it. I see people wear it a lot. Oops, I just did something I shouldn't have done. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I see people wear it and they seem to like it. So it looks cool. So my quick review is it's side entry, which is rad, big pocket, extra flotation. I don't see how you can go wrong with it. Seems like a smart way to go. Is it expensive? How much? $265? That's pretty affordable. I don't know. Seems like a good one. Okay, back to this. One specific thing I'd like to see tested is that shoulder straps are stretchy, which seems to be great for comfort, but potentially not great if someone's trying to pull you out of the water. Yeah, are they stretchy? I don't think they're stretchy. Are you sure they're stretchy? I think those orange straps, I think these orange straps right here aren't stretchy. I think they're just this stretchy, they go under the stretchy material. So I don't think, it looks like there's a buckle right there that you can tighten to make it to like adjust it like a lot of other PFDs. So I don't think they're stretchy. I think they're fine. I think that's a silly thing to make stretchy shoulder things. So, yeah. So I wouldn't call this high buoyancy. I'm going to call like above 22 pounds high buoyancy. I'm going to say low float is like 16 to 17 pounds. Medium float's like 18 to 22. And high float's 23 and above. So this would be in like the medium buoyancy range, a little bit less than the Astral Indus. But if you want flotation, and the Justin Bieber, the NRS Big Water guy, I think is 22 pounds, 9 ounces. That's on the cusp of medium high. But if you're a big guy and you want flotation, you got to go with a Nerd PFD, NRS Type 5. You got to go with a, sorry, you just like, this is the reality. This is high float. I think it's high float. Let's see what the flotation is. 25 pounds, which includes the neck pillow, which is probably, and the neck pillow is kind of pointless. So it's probably 23 pounds. But if you want flotation, unfortunately, this is your option. If you want high float, get this or some other thing like that. Maybe like, I don't know, let's see what this rapid rescuer thing is. The NRS, let's just go back to NRS. Oh, sorry. I didn't have this up. This is the PFD. If you want flotation, you got to wear a Nerd PFD. That's just how it is. You'll look dorky, but whatever. But there's also this rapid rescuer PFD. If you want flotation, maybe this has more than medium. Let's see where we're at. Specs. 22 pounds. Yeah. So like still the high end of medium. Or there's like that. Wait, it's like... there's a one that Sean, you wear, I forget what it's called. I might have more, but, yeah. So the quick answer, let me review your question. I'm not going to ask them for a free PFD. It doesn't make this show authentic because I'm going to be positive because they sent me a free PFD. But it looks cool. I think it looks fine. It's nice that it has more flotation, but I'm going to still call that medium flotation. You call it high flotation, but it's medium. And I don't think those things are stretchy. Yeah, Sean, the Rescue Ops PFD. Yeah, let me see if I can find it. Rescue, who makes Ops PFD? Let's see if I can find this one. Yeah, the 4.6. Now this is super, I'm going to call this Nerd Alert too. Like this is kind of a nerdy PFD. It's a little too rescue squirrel. It's got all kinds of rescue squirrel stuff on it. You are going to look a little bit like a nerd, not as much as that NRS one, but 26 pounds of flotation. Like that's what you want. If you're 240, 250, 260, 300 pounds, you need 26 pounds of flotation. If you're going to run rapids, if you're going to stay on like the class two, maybe do the rogue, you're probably fine. Probably fine. I'm not saying you're fine. Probably fine. Maybe fine. But if your goal is to go do the Wind, the Tuolumne, go do class four, go to the Illinois, Selway, and you're 240, 250, 260 a plus, this 26 pounds of flotation, that's the flotation you need. So I would say almost like a good rule of thumb is you want 10% of your body weight flotation. So if you're 165 pounds, yeah, that green jacket's probably awesome. But if you're 220 pounds, you probably need a 22 pound PFD. So that's when like the Justin Bieber, the NRS guide vest, or what else? Some other PFDs of flotation, the Indus, right? The Indus. I lost my train of thought. You know, if you're 220, the Indus or the Justin Bieber are probably appropriate. But if you're 250 and you have a 16.5 pound PFD, that's not good. Now people are gonna say, well, body mass is neutrally buoyant, so you're gonna float the same. Maybe you're still gonna float the same. The problem is that you're static floating. It's when you go down underwater, how fast do you rise back up? What's the force on your body? How quickly do you resurface? So when you fall out in Mule Creek Canyon, you could be underwater that whole time because there's boiling water. There's not much force pushing your body back up. And if I remember Newton's second law, F equals MA, you need force to make your mass accelerate. And so, you know, you want that force, whether you're neutrally buoyant or not. Okay. Ooh, the NRS vector. Actually, you know, I'm not always a fan of NRS PFDs. You know, I kind of associate NRS with like a low quality brand. And so it's hard to wear a PFD with like a low quality brand name on the front. It's like saying, hey, it's like wearing a Walmart t-shirt, you know, like, it's a little bit embarrassing, but that's my main reason I haven't bought this PFD. Otherwise it looks pretty awesome actually. Yeah, I mean, black is not the color I go with. I'd probably go with this red. It has, what's the flotation on this? Let's see this one. I mean, the large, extra large is 18. The smallest, 15.75. That's not much. They have it graduated by flotation. The extra large is 18 pounds. So, like, I wish it was 22, but whatever. But this does look pretty cool. It has, like, this big clamshell pocket in the front, has a rescue harness for those of you that want to throw yourself in the river tied to a rope. I'm sure that's a lot of you. And it has these cool side zipper pockets I saw. Like, this is the future. Better storage, more storage. Like, that's a killer place to put a flip line right there. Like, the front pouch. I mean, NRS just designed this. In 2024, every PFD should have a phone pocket, a place to put your phone. Maybe that's what this pocket is. Maybe it's not, but like there should be this is the pocket the phone goes. This just, I don't know why PFD manufacturers aren't thinking about this. We all have our phones. We're all shoving them in the pockets. It'd be really cool to have a dedicated phone pocket. I could rant on and on about PFD designs and how frustrated I am that there's just nothing. Nobody has asked a rafter that I know of, what would you like? They just keep making these PFDs for kayakers. And even then, I'm not sure they're asking the right kayakers. They're asking like these class 5+ kayakers. They're not asking the people that like day in, day out are doing class 3. Like, what are the pockets would you like? Maybe if you're a phone, like that would be, if a PFD had a phone pocket, I would be jazzed. I take my phone with me every day boating, take photos, document things. Like if there's a wrap, sure, it's nice to document it. Emergency communication device, especially with the iPhone's new satellite emergency SOS stuff. I can take notes. Like I use my notepad sometimes to remember, like if something happens or somebody asks me a question, I take notes. It just seems like we're all taking the phones with us. The Vector doesn't have the buy your kidney pockets. It has these cool pockets right here though. I think that's a bonus instead of like the Astral just has, you know what? The buy the kidney pockets, I think are ridiculous. Like, most people can't reach back there to open them in the real world. They're good for like some pulleys and prusiks and stuff that you hardly use. And a flip line, you could put a flip line there, but if you can't get to it and I've put my flip line there in the past and I forget what side it's in. So I have to open them both up. And then by the time I open the second one up, you know, it's been too late. So I'd rather have my flip line somewhere easy to get to. And those of you that want to weigh yourself down, you might throw some carabiners or some pulleys in there. I'd much rather have you put carabiners in that silly pocket than hanging on the front of your PFD like you're you want a medal for carabiners. Okay, well, I think that's it. I think I've ranted enough today. Lots of good questions. A couple decent answers. Thank you all for watching the show, for putting up with my nonsense and my ranting. Just to summarize the whole show, I'm not a rescue professional. You shouldn't listen to me about rescue. But PFD manufacturers, give me a call. Come on, let's make something awesome. Let's make a 22 and 25 pound PFD that's designed for rafters with a foam pocket, a place to put your flip line that looks cool, has a cool logo on it. Like, give me a call. It'll be fun to do. Yep. Thanks, Sean. Thank you all for watching. Thanks for being a part of this whole experience of going live on YouTube. I appreciate all the nice comments. And yeah, I'll see you all next Tuesday.